Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. I want to say a big thanks to everybody who contributed during our winter membership drive. What do we have? 5,700 listeners pledged. We're pleased to welcome 1,200 new members to WPR. You donated $680,000 to WPR and the programs you depend on. I want a special thanks to everybody who contributed during this program. I know that I was very pleased. Judith was very pleased. I think everybody's very pleased with the contributions for the entire drive, but in particular for this show. And, you know, one really cool thing, you gave 38,000 meals to area food banks throughout Wisconsin in that Food for 40. Thank you, Gift. And I thought that was really very, very cool. So we're back to our regular programming, and really great to be able to take a look at the stars with Paul Kinzer. He's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's an active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, and he provides a really cool service. It's called Seeing Stars, and it helps adults and children develop an appreciation for the night skies. And he comes by a few times a year to be our guide to this fascinating world of astronomy. And Paul, by the way, thanks again for coming.
Glad to be here.
Appreciate it very much. You may have some questions for him. Boy, we've had the meteors and a lot of talk about asteroids lately, so I know you may well have some questions for Paul. And if you do, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And Paul, there was a significant meteor strike in Russia just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, 10 days ago over, I hope I pronounce this right, Chelyabinsk, Russia. And very interesting. It's the largest known meteor strike since 1908, when another meteor blew up over Russia. That meteor in 1908 was much more powerful and knocked trees down for hundreds of miles. This one, they're saying at this point, NASA is saying that it was equivalent to 470,000 tons of TNT, about 30 Hiroshima bombs.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and at first they thought it might only be a few meters across. Now they're saying it could have been 17 meters or 50 feet across. And this is something that happens about once a century.
It was actually absolutely amazing, and it was fun. That it was interesting that people, you know, because I think of smartphones or whatever. We've got a video recording of it, or a record of it.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I guess in Russia, there's corruption, and so lots of people have dashboard cameras in their cars now, so that if they get pulled over for an illegitimate reason by the police, they will have evidence of, no, I wasn't doing anything wrong, and many of those cameras caught this meteor.
Yeah, and it was really, really, really cool. And a meteor, basically, what is a meteor?
Yeah, those terms, I always like to explain them. There's three different words. A meteoroid is a rock floating in space. How it's different from an asteroid, typically we think of asteroids as bigger. We would have called this one an asteroid if we had spotted it in space. So when it's out in space, it's a meteoroid. When we see the flash in the sky, that's a meteor. And if it hits the ground and anything's left over, those pieces on the ground are called meteorites.
Meteorites. And there's probably plenty left over.
Well, they haven't found much of it.
They haven't?
No. And there were pictures of a big hole in a lake that people thought that's where it hit. And now, at least now, they're saying, no, that hole is there for some other reason. And so we're not sure. Often, even things this big, there's no trace of that one from 1908. Hmm. And it was quite a bit bigger. Sometimes they just blow up into tiny little bits.
Smithereens.
Yeah.
Well, Eric in Oshkosh has a question. Hi, Eric. Thank you for calling.
Hey, great to be on. My question is, you know, we know that the meteor event and the asteroid flyby were not connected, but were we sure that there wasn't anything in orbit around that asteroid that could have entered our atmosphere?
As far as I know, no. You know, it came closer, that asteroid. That was another thing. It happened the same day, but they were not related, and its name is 2012 DA14. It passed closer to Earth than anything that size we've ever known about ahead of time, anyway. Still, it was 17,000 miles away. That's close. That's as close, a little bit closer than some of our orbiting satellites. But it's still well above our atmosphere, and to my knowledge, no, there were no related meteors to that.
Is something that size big enough to have stuff in orbit around it, say 20,000 miles away around it?
As far as I know, you know, even a small rock could have an even smaller rock nearby, and they could be related.
Okay, okay, so it could happen, sure. Thanks, Eric.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. I have an email from Val in Brewell, Wisconsin. Could you please describe the beehive cluster in Cancer? How big does it appear with the naked eye? And can the stars within it be resolved with 10-power binoculars? A few other questions, too. Is this cluster similar to the Pleiades.
Yeah. It's much dimmer than the Pleiades, but it's also much bigger than the Pleiades. It takes up a bigger chunk of sky. And in fact, it's for those like me whose eyes aren't that great, even with their glasses on, it's just a very thin fuzziness in the sky, although it's still about the brightest thing in the constellation Cancer, the Crab. There are not very many bright stars. You can definitely resolve the stars in it with 10-power binoculars. It's called the, and before binoculars were invented, people obviously saw it because it's been known for thousands of years. So you can see it. The best thing to do if you want to see it well with just your eyes is get away from lights.
Yeah. And it's the beehive cluster.
It's a star cluster, which is a group of stars that are actually close together in space. Sometimes stars appear close together, but one might be only half the distance. These are actually close together in space, and there are lots of star clusters up there, and binoculars typically are the best thing to use to see them.
How typical, now here's another one, I'm not pretty sure of the pronunciation. Is it Hyades?
Hyades.
In Taurus?
They're right near the Pleiades in the sky. Actually, the Hyades make up the V-shaped face of Taurus the Bull, which is quite prominent in evening skies right now. And it's especially easy to find right now because the planet Jupiter is right in there next to the Hyades.
So it is nice, visible naked eye?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yep, in fact, even in fairly light-polluted areas, you're going to see it. There's one star that's part of the Hyades called Aldebaran, and it's quite bright. It's near the constellation Orion. However, Aldebaran is not related to the star cluster that it's right next to.
Paul Kinzer, our guest today, the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Great to have him with us today, and certainly if you have questions as we talk about stargazing here in the state, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a photo or a question. Maybe you've got a stargazing photo that you could include on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, or just a question, you can post it there certainly as well. This year is supposed to be the peak, isn't it, of our solar activity, that cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, the sun goes through an 11-year cycle, typically 11 years, and every 11 years there's a trough, and 5.5 years later there's a peak, and then we just go up and down. And this year we are supposed to reach our peak. This is a very strange cycle, though. The last solar minimum, the trough in activity, was very long. There hadn't been one that long in over 100 years. And now the peaking cycle, it's not particularly active compared to other solar cycles. And yet, this is the time when we will see more sunspots. There were hundreds and hundreds of days with no sunspots, and sunspots are storms on the sun. They're a sign of activity. but there has not been one day in a couple of years without at least one or two sunspots on the sun.
And that all that solar activity, isn't that where we get our northern lights?
That's right, northern lights. And at this time in a solar cycle, if you're in the right spot on Earth, you have northern lights nearly every night. Whereas during the trough, that's not so. I was in Alaska during, I believe it was 2 peaks ago. And, of course, in Alaska, it doesn't get dark at night until the season is along. And in late August, it started getting dark, and they were just amazing.
Yeah, that's got to be wonderful. Chris in Menasha has a question for you. Hi, Chris.
Hi. How you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
About that asteroid in 1908 that exploded. I'll take my comment off the air, but two things. One was his explanation on how an asteroid would actually explode to where there wouldn't be anything left of it. And what correlation would that have anything to do with, I think it happened over Russia and the Siberian forest, that had something to do with Nikola Tesla? Having a collection tower he had there that exploded, that might be just confused with the asteroid exploding. I just want to know how an asteroid would actually explode.
Okay, I don't know anything about Tesla's tower, so I won't comment on that. But if you watch the video of this meteor that blew up over Russia 15 or 10 days ago, and now we see that there's very little trace of it left, even though we knew exactly where to look. And they may find more, and there may be bits of the Tunguska, whatever it was. It could have been a comet, a small comet. It could have been an asteroid. The only difference is comets have a lot of volatiles in them, gases, water, things like that. They're hitting the atmosphere at tens of thousands of miles per hour. Someone put it online. It's like they're hitting a wall. And even though the wall is made of air, the air has mass, and they smack into it with huge amounts of energy, and they're just blown apart by that. And they are saying this was a typical asteroid meteor called a chondrite, which is, it's not solid metal or anything, it's just rock.
Ice, isn't it?
There's some ice in it, but it's not very hard. So when it hits the atmosphere with all that energy, it just disintegrates. And again, in the video, a minute or so after the flash, thousands of windows just shattered. And that was energy that had a shockwave from an explosion that took place miles up in the atmosphere. So just blown to bits is what happens.
And it was in an area where, I mean, there are people there. I mean,
This is a city of about 1 million people. And a sort of scary thing to me is it wasn't that far from where Russia stores its nuclear stock. It has its nuclear material stockpile within, I believe, 100 miles of there. And, you know, that's sort of worrisome. You know, if this had hit, you know, if it had been a little bigger or it had made a little further through the atmosphere by maybe coming in at a higher angle, it came in at a pretty flat angle. If it had come straight in, maybe it would have hit harder. If something the size of the Tunguska, which was several times larger than this one, if that blew up over a major city, that major city would be gone.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Paul Kinzer, our guest today, as we talk with him about stargazing in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net as we talk stargazing with Paul Kinzer, Larry Mueller here. Again, thanks for listening in. Really appreciate your input. So if you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly look forward to hearing from you. And Orion's the biggest, the brightest.
Yes, this is a great time to look at the constellation Orion. As soon as it gets dark, it's fairly high up in the eastern sky. Orion the Hunter, it's the brightest constellation in the sky. Because it has so many bright stars in it. And again, right near it now is the planet Jupiter, sort of right above and to the right of Orion as it's coming up. Beautiful thing to look at. Naked eye, binoculars, telescope, there's lots to see in that constellation.
And then by the end of March, Saturn's...
Right. If you stay up till midnight or so, Saturn will be rising in the east right now. But by the end of next month, it'll be rising around 10 p.m. Every month as we go around the sun, things come up about 2 hours earlier. And starting in late March, yes, Saturn will be up all night, and that will last for several months. And the rings on Saturn are opening up now. And if you have even a small telescope, if you can magnify 45, 50 times, which a lot of spotting scopes can do, you can see Saturn's rings.
That is very, very cool. I've got to get out there and take a look. Last night, my daughter, well, early, you know, before it was really dark, my daughter, we were in the car going somewhere, I forget where. Anyway, she said, oh, look at the moon.
Yeah, oh, yes.
And the moon was just beautiful last night.
Yeah, last night was the full moon, and it was also the end of Chinese New Year. It always ends on the full moon. So we actually went outside and lit some fireworks off just for fun.
Oh, that's great. Tom in Hales Corners, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
My question is, it's about the angle of entry into Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And remember... back during the space program where the Apollo program, the capsules had to hit a specific angle. There's a very small window. Otherwise, they would either go in and, well, I guess that's burn up or bounce out into space.
Right.
So how come so many of these meteorites and that make it into our atmosphere?
Well, because, as you say, the angle of entry had to be just so for them not to burn up. If the angle had been steeper, that capsule would have become a meteor. You would have seen a nice flash in the sky as they burned up. And even if it had bounced off, it could also have left a meteor trail. And the thing is... They had a shape that was very specifically designed, and they had a shield on them that was supposed to take the heat of reentry, and they were going much slower than most meteors are going when they hit the atmosphere. The other thing is that there's kind of a lot of little stuff out there. Most of the meteors you see, if you see what people call a shooting star, it has nothing to do with stars, but if you see one of those, it's usually only the size of a grain of sand or maybe a small pebble. Larger ones, the larger they are, the more rare they are. One the size of, 3 feet across might happen somewhere on the Earth every day. One the size of a Volkswagen might be once a week or two. The bigger they are, the more rare they are.
Hmm.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
The asteroid that just went past us, did the Earth's gravity change its trajectory?
You know, I wondered about that myself, and I haven't. I've been reading about it, but I haven't read anyone saying that yet. So I have an idea. They're checking their numbers to make sure before they make such an announcement. You would think, though, that it did pass close enough that it would have some effect on it, but it may take a while to know what that was.
Yeah,
there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks. And again, it was sort of running parallel to the Earth, as it.
Yeah, its orbit is not. It's about a year. It takes about a year to go around the sun as well as the Earth does. And they do know the orbit well enough to know that it isn't going to hit the Earth at any known time in the future. And these kinds of asteroids are interesting now because there are at least two companies that have said they are going to go and they are going to mine asteroids, and they're looking for asteroids that do come close to the Earth that maybe relative to the Earth aren't going too fast so they can catch up to them. And there are some pretty big names who are part of these companies, people who started Google and Microsoft and things like that.
Very interesting. Tom, thanks again. Appreciate it very much. Bill in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hey, hello. I'm an amateur astronomer at times, and I wonder if the guest could comment on what the current recommended starting out for somebody, like we used to always say a 7x50 binocular was the best way to go and learn some constellations in, you know, from your location if it's in the city. And then when you go out in dark skies, you're going to be befuddled by the many more stars that you see, and you'll lose some of those constellations. So you have to get grounded in the basic constellations. Is that the current thought on that?
Well, if we had several hours, I could talk about this. Is actually, I wrote a book, Stargazing Basics. That's what it's all about. Everyone has a different opinion. I think starting out without any equipment at all and going outside and looking up and getting to understand the phases of the moon and how it goes around the Earth and getting to know at least where is the Big Dipper, how do I find the North Star, those kinds of things are very important, and they're also fun. But then there are other people now. I know Larry on his smartphone, he has an app for finding out what's in the sky right now, and you can aim it and you can learn everything you need to know about the sky before actually going out. I have a program on my computer. It's free, a free download called Stellarium, and it's fantastic. It's especially good if it's cloudy out and you can't get outside. You can find out what's up in the sky right now or 100,000 years ago or 100,000 years from now, on not just on Earth but on Mars and a few other places. And then there are people who, you know, there's all sorts of advice on what's the first telescope to get. And as far as binoculars go, 7x50 is fine. My own opinion is that 10x50 would be better because the little exit pupil, the size of the circle of light coming out of that binocular is about the size of your pupil, as wide as it can open up. And it does bring things in a little closer. With 10 power binoculars, you can see that Jupiter has a shape and see craters on the moon better and see moons of Jupiter. And that's my opinion, though. Different people think different things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is a little harder to hold a 10 power as opposed to a 7 power.
That's true.
I found that out when I broke my 7s and got 10s.
Yep. You're exactly right.
Back in the 80s, there was a book out by a guy named Ben Mayer, and he talked about making star frames out of coat hangers, and you square them up or rectangle them and put some cellophane on them, and then you put your constellation on there, and you hold it about 15 to 18 inches from your face, and they line up with the stars, the constellations in the sky, a real convenient little device to identify constellations. You just line them up like a transparent stencil.
Yeah, that's interesting. That would be a fun thing for kids to do and maybe get them more invested in, okay, now where is this? I made this thing. I need to find it.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Or, as you were saying, I've got a little app on my iPhone that's called Star Tracker, and that's an amazing app.
Right. Can you zoom in and out with that?
You zoom in and out. You point it at wherever you point it. That's what it'll show you what's in the sky.
And maybe the person who wrote that app had one of these cellophane coat hanger things 25 years ago. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. It's sure a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And my 9-year-old just loves to play with it.
Sure. You can even use it during the day, can't you? Just hold it up and
here's what's in the sky.
Even though we can't see it right now.
Yep. Or point it straight down. Here's what's on the other side of the world.
right.
There we go, Bill. Thank you for calling. I want to give Earl in Medford a chance to join us. Earl, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning. It's a great show. I wanted to ask about, I think there could be many of these meteors in near-Earth orbits that we don't know about, and yet the feds are cutting funding to NASA and astronomers and that. Shouldn't they increase the funding and look for more of these?
Well, I sure think so. And there's a couple of weeks ago, I heard someone from on Science Friday on NPR, someone from a foundation called B612. That's the name of the asteroid the Little Prince lives on in that famous book. They're trying to raise private money to send a telescope into space to find these smaller ones. We think we know about most of the larger asteroids out there now, and there are hundreds of thousands of them. But it's these ones, like the one that went by not long ago, that they figure we only know about 1% of those. And we could find them if we dedicated ourselves to it. And many countries around the world are funding telescopes to do this, telescopes on Earth and telescopes in space. We are zooming in on this, but you're right. I mean, they're any day now, there's no way to see these little ones coming. This could happen again at any time. It's not like, oh, well, we had one, and we're not going to get another one for a while. We could get one right now.
Yeah.
Could I ask one quick follow-up?
Sure.
Is this just coincidence that this meteor burst over Russia not real far from the 1898 landing? That sounded weird or eerie to me.
1908. Yeah, 1908, it's pure coincidence. Russia is huge. It wasn't really, I mean, it was many, many hundreds of miles away, but it's just a coincidence. There was one that blew up over the Pakistan-India border a while ago. If we don't see them coming, we don't even know about them. And if they don't happen over areas where they leave a trace, there could have been several of them that happened over the ocean or deserts in the last 100 years, but we wouldn't know.
Hmm. There you go. Thanks, Earl.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way, if you have a question for our guest today. Paul Kinzer does a great job. He's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, a great book. And appreciate having him along, and thanks for listening. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can also post on my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. Email from Jackie in Madison wonders, is there a comet that will be visible in early to mid-March?
There certainly is, and I'm glad you brought that up. That's something I definitely wanted to talk about. They've known for quite a while there's a comet. It's called Comet Pan-STARRS, which Pan-STARRS is a... Comets are the one thing that are named for their discoverer in space. So if I found one, it would be Comet Kinzer. But now most of them are being discovered by satellites and telescopes because they can see better than I can. And that's this one. This one will be in our skies starting really the week of March 10th. And I don't know why they did this. 6 months ago, they were saying it was going to be fantastic. It was going to be the best comet in decades. And that was a pretty silly thing to do, because predicting how bright a comet will get is not possible. You can't do it. And usually when they do it, when they say it's going to be really bright, and then it turns out not to be as bright as they thought, people go, oh, what are they doing? Well, it isn't going to be quite as bright as they thought it was, but right now you can see it if you're in the southern hemisphere, and in the next week or two it's going to whip around the sun, and then we will be able to see it. And already before it's gotten to the sun, it's bright enough to see with the naked eye in the southern hemisphere. I was looking at pictures of it last night. Not as bright as they thought. They thought it might be, you know, there are people talking as bright as a full moon, and it's not going to happen. But starting about March 10th, if you go right where the sun has set, it's going to be fairly near the sun. So when the sun sets, and if you look up half an hour after the sun sets, you may be able to see a little ball with a tail coming off it. And this isn't a meteor that whips across the sky in a matter of seconds. It'll be there night after night as it moves away from the sun. And each night during that week, it's going to get higher in the sky. On the 12th, that will be an especially interesting night, because there will be a very skinny crescent moon near the comet in the sky. And if you use binoculars and look at the comet, if you know where you're looking, it'll be very close to the planet Uranus in the sky. Now, Uranus will just look like a very dim star, but you can at least say, hey, I saw a comet with Uranus. We still don't know quite, because it's going to whip around the sun. A comet is a ball of gas, and when it gets close to the sun's going to start melting it. And for all we know, it'll get much, much, much brighter. But it's something to look for, and that's, to me, part of the fun of looking for comets is you don't know what's going to happen. And I just also want to add that in November and December, there is another comet that's coming that is large, because even though it's very far from the sun, it's already, for what it is, pretty bright. And again, they're starting to say it could be the comet, they're calling it the comet of the century, but we just don't know yet.
Matthew in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. Great. What's on your mind?
I've been very interested in space for a long time, having since first heard of the Saturn V rockets and the NASA program in the 60s. That's what really got me started on thinking about space. But with everything that's going on these days in regards to the Mars Land Rover and talks about setting up a permanent moon base, what do you think would be a great launching point to introduce children to the future of a space program?
Wow. Well, you know, here in America, I think sometimes we're pretty centered on the United States, and NASA is a great place. But to me, I'm thinking it's going to be, and already is, much more international. There are countries. Just this morning, I heard a story about the space program in India. They're planning on sending a satellite to Mars. And I think it's interesting. I work with kids, so introducing them not only to what's up with space programs, but getting them involved in understanding what's going on all around the globe. We're all on this one little ball together. So, the European Space Agency, NASA has just now agreed to work together with them on a probe going to Jupiter. So the international aspect of it, I think, is very interesting. And I hope it doesn't happen, but it may be that we're getting into another space race. China is getting very interested in space. And there are people who say, well, maybe that'll be a good thing. It'll get America back up there. But I want us to go up for the right reasons, exploration, mm-hmm. not necessarily just competition. Because, when we landed on the moon, 10 minutes later, there are people saying, okay, why are we going back?
Exactly.
And, when I was in grade school, I would sit there drawing the Apollo spacecraft, and it was fascinating. And I really wanted to be an astronaut. And then everything kind of died out. There is so much going on. There are so many things where you can go. And with the internet, there are so many. NASA, you can go to their website. We're kind of making some of these people into rock stars again. When Curiosity landed, that was fascinating stuff. And the videos are all up there. So,
and even a lot of the videos that they're having with the astronauts and the International Space Station.
Yes.
Have been pretty fascinating to just see people that you can relate to as normal human beings kind of floating in zero gravity, throwing tools at each other. I think that's always been very fascinating. So.
Yes, and that's another thing. The International Space Station, it's up there, and there are people on it all the time. And you can see it. That's the cool thing. You can go to a website called heavensabove.com, heavens-above.com, and put your location on Earth in there, and it will tell you over the next week or so, when is the International Space Station going to pass over you? So have the kids watch some of these videos from the International Space Station.
Okay.
And then, let's go out and look at it. And it tells you to the second when it's going to appear, how long it's going to be in the sky, and it can be very, very bright, brighter than Venus.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
one more time, what was the name of the website?
Heavensabove.com. Heavens-above.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Well, appreciate it very much. Judith in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering about a road trip, possibly. Where can we go near Milwaukee or within a two-hour drive, other than the Adler Planetarium, to get some more astronomy information for children and grandchildren? Are there other planetariums and observatories?
You know, I am from the exact opposite side of the state. I'm not real familiar with Milwaukee. I know there is a state park north of there, and I'm not recalling its name, that actually has an observatory. But I'm very sorry. I'm not familiar with the Milwaukee area.
Someone else may be able to help us out on that one, Judith, so stay listening.
Well, I do know.
All right, thank you.
There's the Yerkes telescope.
Yeah.
That's a very visitor friendly, even though I have yet to go visit it, but that's another spot.
And it's located
not too far from Milwaukee. I'm not recalling the exact location, but I've heard, it's the largest refractor in the world, so it's historically very important.
Thanks again for calling, Judith. Paul in Kenosha, hi to you.
Thank you. Do comets sometimes orbit more than one star? And also, do they sometimes accumulate material as they travel through space, as well as lose it when they get close to their star?
As far as I know, they don't gain any material. One of the reasons scientists are very interested in comets is they believe, and they have reason to believe, that they are sort of leftovers from when the solar system formed. And we wouldn't know about comets around other stars because they're just too small. We're finding planets around other stars. In fact, they just found one not much bigger than Mercury, I believe, or maybe it's a little smaller than Mercury. But a comet is typically only a mile or a few miles across, so we haven't found those around any other stars.
Hmm. And we've got, just looking ahead, Paul, we've got Astronomy Day, April 20th.
Yep, in the spring and the fall, amateur astronomy clubs around the country have what they call Astronomy Day outreach programs to get people to go out and look at the sky, and this year's Spring Astronomy Day is Saturday, April 20th, and my astronomy club, the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, it will have solar viewing at Riverside Park in La Crosse, and then that's usually right around noon, 11 to 2 or 1, and then in the evening they'll be back there again and they'll have their telescopes out to look at the night sky.
Lots of fun. And you're still, obviously, your service, Seeing Stars, still going great?
Yep. The last summer was extremely busy. I went to about 50 libraries, did more than 100 programs for over 3,000 people. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to my website, seeingstarswi.wordpress.com, or just do a Google search for Seeing Stars and my last name, Kinzer, K-I-N-Z-E-R, and it'll get you there.
Paul, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. I love coming.
I really appreciate it. Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's a great book. He's an active member, as he said, of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, and his service, Seeing Stars, helps adults and children develop an appreciation for the night sky. He's got a really cool... really cool way of showing that, and I'm glad that he's willing to come by once in a while and talk with us. Well, coming up, we're going to keep looking up in the sky. There's a lot to learn, and our weather guys have some great information to share typically as well, and they're coming up next. They'll be with us next, talking weather and climate here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.